Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you all today. My guest will be Junie Moon Schreiber. She is a professionally trained actress and licensed acupuncturist, but she's coming on because her passion is as a life coach and as a certified shadow work facilitator. And so she's going to be on in a little bit and tell us what exactly that is. But until then, I first want to share with you some things going on in and around the city, some things in the news, and of course, my weekly recipe with you. So, I guess, you know, I keep trying to not talk about this presidential debate or presidential election that's coming up, but it's really hard to completely avoid it if I want to talk about what's in the news. It's just so blatantly apparent that when they're talking to the presidential nominees, they must have to work really hard to not talk about climate change or food in the questions that they ask them. You know, I participated on an online questioning survey, and I mean, thousands of people want to know about climate change and want to know about what they're going to do about food access and healthy food, and they're just not talking about that kind of stuff at all. Instead, they'd rather talk about sexual scandals and, you know, taxes and emails. And it's just unbelievable that we cannot get any substance out of these two people as to what's really going to go on. It just was embarrassing watching the last debate. That's all I can say. It was embarrassing to me. I had a debate party here. I had like 12 friends over so we could watch it together, so we could like commiserate our misery. But anyway, whether you love our choices or not, there's definitely one choice that's better than the other, and I hope you all get out and vote and make the right choice, because 4 years under the influence of Trump just would do us in. So please do get out and vote. And, you know, send in those questions, sign petitions that you want climate change and food to be on the agenda, because it really, really needs to be. So lots of things going on in around the city. This time of year, it's just amazing with all the fall fairs and pumpkin pickings and things going on like that. I list a lot of these things, or most of these things, on my website. So if you really want to check out what's going on in the New York area, check onto my website at iegreen.com. But you can pick pumpkins every day out in the island at many different farms. There's one at Organics Today, which is in East Islip. But it is time for pumpkins. And you know, my recipe today actually is going to be with butternut squash, because that's also coming out of the garden right now. And there's so many of them. So I know I did a butternut squash recipe last week, and I'm doing another one this week. So we'll celebrate that in just a little bit. This weekend, October 13th through the 16th, is the New York City Wine and Food Festival. There's loads of different events going on all weekend long. Many of them are sold out, but there's still tickets for many of them. So go onto the website at nycwff.org to find out what events are still open. But it should be a really fun weekend of lots of coming together with lots of great people. There's actually even a rooftop event where you can audition to be on the next Top Chef. So that should be fun. October 14th, oh, not Top Chef, I'm sorry, for Chopped. Anyway, October 14th, there's a farm-to-school conference in Maine that is taking place at Bates College, and it's all weekend long, and it's only $25 per person. It's going to be a really great. All these farm-to-school conferences are just really wonderful. There's another one Sunday, October 16th through Tuesday, October 18th. It's called the ABCs of Farm-Based Education. That's at Shelburne Farms in Vermont. And, you know, again, check out my website for a lot of these farm-based education workshops. It's really catching on. We're trying to introduce healthier food into schools and doing it through education and working curriculum into these lesson plans is just essential. And the kids learn so much more when they actually have these hands-on experiences. It really sticks with them, and they're much more likely to want to eat the healthy food when they've grown it. So if you're at all involved in education, getting school gardens going and bringing some of that beautiful produce into your cafeterias is just wonderful. October 15th, North Shore Land Alliance is having a Walk in the Woods program. They have these programs every month, and this one is going to be at Fort Totten, which is in Bayside. So you can sign up at the North Shore Land Alliance website for that. And October 16th, at noon, there's a Fall Harvest Festival at Crossroads Farm in Malvern. And October 19th is the Urban Food Policy Forum, taking place up at CUNY. You know, they have their Urban Food Policy Institute, and it's just great, and every month they have different events going on. This one is not the breakfast, though. This is in the afternoon from 4 to 6, and it's at the CUNY School of Public Health on 125th Street. And these events are usually free. I don't know if this one is, but check it out. I think they're usually free. Thursday, October 20th, this is a great event. The New York Coalition of Healthy School Food is having their annual gala, and it's called Let Your Palate Be Your Ballot. And the Coalition for Healthy School Food is an organization that is working hard to bring plant-based food into the schools. They're doing great work. They are in many schools. They actually have a couple schools that are completely vegetarian now, completely plant-based. But this is an event that is open to everyone. It's from 6:30 to 9:30 on Thursday, October 20th, and it's a vegan delight. I mean, they have so many different chefs and restaurants providing vegan food for tasting. And I will be there, of course, serving up some delicious food. So come meet me there and help support this wonderful organization. Also Thursday, October 20th, there is a beer tasting event called Beer Glass, and you enjoy your own beer glass designed for the occasion. It takes place at Six Point Brewery, and the glass that you're drinking out of is created by Urban Glass Studios. And it should be a fun event. Everyone will get their own glass and get to taste lots of the craft beer that will be there on display. Tickets for that is a little pricey, $150, but I'm sure it will be fun. October 23rd, I am hosting a yoga retreat and farm-to-table cooking class here at the IE Green Homestead. Tickets are $108, and that includes an incredible yoga workout and the organic cooking class. So hope you can join us for that. There's still tickets left. November 3rd is the River Fund New York Silver Anniversary Gala. The River Fund is the organization that I've been partnering with for the last 22 years that runs the most incredible food pantry, because it's not just a food pantry where they are treating the symptom and giving food to everybody, but they are a full service organization that really gets to know the families, knows the kids, helps them with mentoring in school, has a scholarship program to even help some of these kids go to college. They set them up with, you know, Medicaid and Medicare or whatever people need. They have a program for pregnant women. They do a huge baby shower for all the women. They just really are looking at the whole family organization. They're doing great work, and this is a major fundraiser for them. They'll be honoring Gwyneth Paltrow. It is on November 3rd from 6 to 10:30, and then at 10:30 there's an after party that starts as well. Go to the River Fund New York's website to purchase tickets. I will be there, and I hope to see many of you there. November 10th through the 12th is the Northeast Regional Conference called It Takes a Region, and tickets for that are anywhere from $20 to $260, but it's a coming together of everybody in the Northeast to talk about food and our food systems and to collaborate and to really, you know, look at our food system from a critical standpoint and what we can do to improve it. So that should be good. And November 12th, Change Food Fest is taking place, and there's actually screenings taking place all across the country. So if you're not in New York City and don't want to spend the $325 to go to the Change Food Fest, you can participate in a live screening. The woman that organizes this Change Food Fest previously had organized the TEDx Manhattan programs. And so she has some really great speakers lined up. And we are hosting a Change Food Fest screening at the Cinema Arts Center out in Huntington with Slow Food North Shore. So you can come down and join us there. We'll have food and, you know, make it a really fun time for everybody. So I hope you can make it to that. I now want to share with you my recipe. As I said, you know, this time of year we have so many squashes coming out of the garden, and it's also the time of year where people tend to get sick. They get colds because you're switching weather on a daily basis, going from hot weather to cold weather, and you never quite know how to dress, and you leave the house for a hot day, and then night comes, and it starts getting really chilly, and you're not quite prepared. And so this recipe makes use of the delicious butternut squash coming out of the garden, but it also pairs it with some miso, ginger, and garlic. So it's, I call it a healing squash soup with miso and ginger. And, you know, it makes enough for 8 people. I do 16 cups of water and 1 butternut squash, and I cube that up, and I ended up with about 8 cups of cubed butternut squash. So butternut squashes come in all sizes, but that just gives you an idea. I had a 1/4 cup of minced garlic and 1/4 cup of minced ginger, 1 large organic onion chopped, 3/4 cup red miso. You can also use a white miso if you want it a little bit mellower and sweeter, but I was going for, you know, the squash already is sweet, so I was going for the red miso. 2 tablespoons coconut oil, 2 carrots chopped, 2 celery chopped, 3 teaspoons salt, 1/2 teaspoons white pepper, 1 cup of applesauce, 2 tablespoons apple cider vinegar, 2 tablespoons pomegranate molasses, and then parsley and lemon for garnish. So in a large pot, I brought the water to a boil, and I added the butternut squash to that and let that boil up for a while until the squash gets soft. And while that's going on, you're going to saute the onions, the carrots, and the celery in the coconut oil in your cast iron frying pan, along with the ginger and garlic for about 10 minutes until they all get soft. And then you add them to the pot of soup. And sauteing the vegetables, if you want, if you're avoiding oil and you don't want to do that, you can actually throw everything into the pot. I like sauteing the vegetables first because I just think it brings out some of the sweetness. So that's really a personal choice. So then I added the vegetables. I removed about 2 cups of the broth of the water from the soup pot. And in a separate bowl or measuring cup, mix the 3/4 cup of miso with the boiling water or broth and just dissolve the miso in that. And then add the mixture back into the soup pot. Once you've added the miso into the soup pot, you want to make sure you don't boil this, let the soup boil because it kills the medicinal properties of the miso. So you can have it hot, but don't let it come back to a boil. Add the salt and pepper. The applesauce just added a little bit more sweetness to it, and the apple cider vinegar was your, you know, was your acid that just, you know, helped the flavors pop. And the pomegranate molasses just brought in a little bit of sweetness and depth to the flavors. And then I pureed it with an immersion blender until everything was smooth. And you can also leave it a little choppy if you prefer that. And that's it. I garnished it with some fresh parsley and served it with a lemon wedge on the side. And it was just delicious. So please enjoy that. And as always, you can check out some of my other recipes in my archives on iegreen.com. And send me a message if you make the soup and let me know how you enjoyed it. I always love hearing feedback from everybody. Okay, and now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest to all of you. Junie Moon Schreiber is a professionally trained actress and a licensed acupuncturist, but her passion and what she does full-time is being a life coach. Junie Moon helps create a life that is passionate, authentic, and fulfilling by teaching them how to turn down the volume on their inner critic, that little voice that talks to us all, and that allows them the freedom to do whatever they dream possible. She's a certified shadow work facilitator, and I'm going to let her tell us what that actually is. She's also the creator of Mission Is Possible Transformation Program, co-author of the Amazon number one best-selling book, Journey to Joy, and host of Life Out Loud TV. And I actually was a guest on her show one time, and it was a lot of fun, too. So, Junie, it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's great to be here, and my goodness, there's so much coming up. That's so exciting.
You know, this time of year, there always is. I mean, all year long, there's so many different things going on. It's really great, and I spend a lot of time trying to, you know, gather all these different great things and put them in one place so people can just check out my website and see what's going on. But winter's the only time that it gets a little slow, I'd say.
Yeah. Fall is just a yummy time, certainly. And with the recipes and the root vegetables and, you know, you got it going on there. That was a really juicy intro of lots of information. It was great.
Good. So can you tell everybody what is a certified shadow work facilitator? What do you do?
Okay. Well, I'm going to back it up for a second and say that, yeah, my passion truly is helping people shine in their light, in their life, that shine their unique light. And I know that a lot of people do call me a life coach, but I actually call myself a transformational coach because shadow work is transformational. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm not, you know, coaching people with their further life, but there's a little bit of a difference. And so, so shadow work is a body of work founded by Cliff Berry. I know a lot of people are talking about shadow these days and saying they're doing shadow work. And so the body of work that I'm talking about when I say I'm a certified shadow work facilitator is, it's actually a registered trademarked name. And my phone just fell. Hold on one second. I don't want to disconnect you. There we go. So it's personal growth work. And I went through a very specific training to be a certified shadow work facilitator of groups and one-on-one coaching shadow work trained coach as well. And to really talk about what the certification or what that is, we really need to like kind of go right to what the heck is a shadow, and why would we do shadow work? So, kind of the nuts and bolts of what the shadow is, and then what shadow work is as we see it, we were born full spectrum personality with full expression and no censoring, and you know, baby doesn't think I better not do this or cry or laugh. It just is. It's full. But then life happens, you know, we get messages from our culture, we get messages from well-meaning parents, how to be, how not to be, and so we start to cut off or repress aspects of who we are, of our personality, of our expression, because somewhere along the line we got a message that it wasn't okay to be that way. It's not okay to raise your voice. It's not okay to speak your opinion. It's not okay to be creative. It's not okay to wear certain clothing, you know, or... So we get all these messages, and then we start kind of cutting off and repressing really juicy parts of who we are. We lose access to a lot of energy of who we are, and we call that shadow. We say we're kind of throwing it behind us in a shadow bag per se, and we lose access to really vital energy, the fullness of who we are. And there's reasons why we cut these parts off. I mean, we maybe witnessed something where a certain energy or personality type harmed another person. Like maybe we saw some anger expressed in an unhealthy way and somebody got hurt. Or maybe we were literally told, you know, little boys don't cry, suck it up, be a man. And suddenly that little boy got a message, it's not okay to be vulnerable, it's not okay to shed tears, you know. So we push these parts of who we are away, and it takes a lot of energy to not be who we are, so it's exhausting, and then we get to our 30s and 40s and 50s, and we're kind of walking a very fine line of expressing, and we feel the pain, we feel the cost. There's great cost not fully being expressed, not fully coming from our heart. And that comes out as bad behaviors, whether it's toward people or toward ourselves. One of the reasons we talked about me being on the show is we could know all the greatest things about eating well and how to nourish our bodies and how to, you know, be part of the world and make a difference. But if there's shadows lingering, we can sabotage ourselves by not being fully in connection with all of who we are in a healthy way. So shadow work then is when people realize things aren't working in their life in some way, whether it's their intimate relationships, their relationships with themselves. Specifically for me, one of the biggest things was with food. I had a very challenging relationship with food where I would gain 40, 50 pounds up and down the scale many, many times in my adulthood, using food as a drug, using food as a way of coping and calming myself down and dealing with the unexpressed emotions that were in shadow for me. And so when people find themselves struggling or not fully being who they really want to be or getting out there and living the life that they still want to live, whether it's a new career or a new loved one or some passion or just basically, you know, living their life and being happy, when something is out of sorts and they're not in alignment, shadow work gives people an opportunity to kind of peek under the covers to figure out why. Why are we having this voice in our head, this inner critic that's telling us we don't deserve something or we can't have something or we're not good enough, you know, we're not pretty enough, thin enough, smart enough, who do you think you are? Like all these little voices or big voices in our head that keep us stuck or limited. We bring all that to the table. And so, like a life coach, and I don't know much about life coaching, but a life coach in general is helping people move forward and figure out what's going on and why they have negative thoughts and change them, by thinking positive thoughts and rewiring to a certain extent. Shadow work does the same thing, but it goes way
back.
Yeah.
Right.
It goes back to the original core issue. It goes back to the what really happened when you were five that made you go, oh, I really can't do my artwork or, you know, who am I to think that I can stand up in front of an audience? I mean, I was bullied terribly as a teenager, so I got a message early on that something was wrong with me and don't put yourself out there. Someone's gonna make a comment or, you know, you're gonna fall flat, you know?
Right. So would you assume, like, is it safe to assume that everyone has a shadow, has some stuff that's been repressed, or are some people shadow-free?
No. I stand strong in the belief that we all have shadows, and even as a shadow worker, I'm a human being, and an embodied human being with emotions and thoughts, and there's layers of it, but yeah, I'm not shadow free. I have to stay awake. I sometimes don't see things that my colleagues will help me see if I'm feeling something or struggling with something. And so, yeah, I strongly believe that we all have shadows. Mm-hmm. I think.
So, how does someone know what is in a shadow for them?
Ah, that's a great question. It's a great question. Yeah, so, you know, and everybody that's listening, it's a really cool thing to do right now, which is to actually think about people in your life or types of people that you come across that really irritate you, you know, personality traits that really irk you and get under your skin. You know, maybe, you know, you go to a party and you see someone walk in, you go, oh, that person drives me nuts. Or, oh gosh, you know, arrogant people really piss me off, or, you know, lazy people, or what? If you're pointing the finger at some kind of person or a trait, that is a clue that you've cut off some part of that energy. Doesn't mean that they're not arrogant. It doesn't mean that they're not lazy, but you have created an opinion, a strong charge around this personality trait, and most likely you've decided that it's not okay to be like that. That's why you're judging them, you know. And if you're judging them, that's a part that you're going to try really hard not to be like. And so you might be the complete opposite, and there can be a cost. So you know, I'm not going to be an angry person like my dad was to my mom or my mom was to my dad or whatever the scenario is. So maybe somebody came, you know, so angry people, people that are in your face or whatever, that might be... something that's like, yeah, really gets uncomfortable. And so maybe anger is what's been cut off and put in shadow. I will never be like that. That is not okay to be angry. So
What shadow could I be triggering every time I see Trump's face?
Well, what does when you see Trump's face, what does that elicit in you? What's your opinion about Trump's face?
stupidity, anger,
okay, so I, yeah,
arrogance.
So he makes you feel angry, but what's your opinion about him that you don't like? What gets to you?
That he's bullheaded, that he's
yeah.
so full of himself.
Yeah, okay, great. So
that he has no regard for anybody else but himself. He's selfish.
Right, self-absorbed, full of himself. Yeah, yeah. I'm just laughing because I usually don't do the politics thing, but this is actually fun.
I don't either. I really stay away from it, but it's just been... watching the debate this past weekend was just painful.
It was horrible. It was really horrible. At one point, I just was like, okay, music time, let's dance. I can't do this anymore. So does this mean that he's not full of himself, arrogant, self-absorbed? No, I would agree that he is. but if it's really getting underneath your skin, like I can't say that triggers me anymore. It used to, but it doesn't trigger me anymore. I could see that he's like that. And I have other concerns, issues, frustrations about what's going on, but that doesn't trigger me.
It probably doesn't trigger me either. I mean, I just think he is what he is. But it doesn't really affect me.
That. Right. But let's just say someone is watching him and going, oh, I really hate arrogant people like that that are just like so full of themselves. So somewhere along the line, that person probably experienced so many different possibilities. But let's say they experienced somebody judging them as being too big, too bright, too bold. And I will own that as something that's happened to me. I have a big personality, very bubbly, and at a very young age, I was told to tone it down. I was told to, you know, whoa, you're too big, June, you know, just, you know, chill out. You know, it's like, you know, who do you think you are? So at a young age, I got a critical judgment from people around me saying, too bright. And so I cut off, I pushed away, I toned down my light so that I wouldn't get that judgment. So what I put in shadow was my voice, my ability to be seen, my bigness. And so what came out was the opposite, which was I became very cautious. I kept my mouth shut when sometimes I really wanted to speak up. I didn't take chances and take risks for things that mattered to me because as an actress, if I went for that audition and really went full blast, you know, I might have gotten criticized. So I missed out on really shining the fullness of who I was because there was a part of me that was going, don't do it. You don't even have what it takes. And that inner critic telling me not to do it because, you know, somebody's going to, you know, find out that, you know, I suck or something. And so I cut off that. And so because I cut it off, every time I saw somebody who was fully in their brightness, boldness, if they were in it in an authentic, grounded, beautiful way, I admired it because that's a golden shadow. I saw that beauty, the power, the expression of a healthy light. But if somebody was overshooting and being too big, too bright, too bold, it was like, ugh, that is just like, who are they? Because I was being so careful to not let that out from myself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to know what's in shadow is you look around and see, well, what personality traits really get you? And then go bring it back to yourself, you know? Bring it back to yourself and go, well, where might have I decided that wasn't okay? And what is inside that energy that's gold? Like inside of anger is healthy boundary setting, is the ability to say no and yes, you know? Having access to healthy anger is really important. Otherwise, it'll slip out and fight somebody when you least expect it, whether it's flash anger or anger toward ourselves. That's what happens when we have repressed shadows, repressed energy. It's going to come out some way. So shadow work is a way of accessing all of this so that we can stay awake, aware, and be conscious and make good choices.
So in a sense, you're saying you need to embrace those qualities, even if you kind of have a negativity towards them. Embrace them so that you can repurpose them or develop a new relationship with them, in a sense.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily an intellectual process. That's the great thing about shadow work is it's, you know, yes, we use our heads and we think things through, but a lot of it is going into the body and feeling things through and going back and changing the brain mapping, so to speak. So, yeah, so it is about rewiring and accessing that energy, but in a healthy way. So when something's in shadow, when something is pushed away and disowned, it can sometimes have control over us. It could come out when we least expect it as sabotage or sarcasm or just, you know, whatever it might come out as. And that's sometimes, we don't have control over it. We find ourselves saying things like, oh my God, that is so not me. I can't believe I said that, or I can't believe I did that. You know, oh, I was eating so well and I was taking such good care of myself. You know, and then last night I ate a whole apple pie. What was that about? Where did that come from, you know? So behaviors that have control over us, that's not the greatest of way to be in life. That's not how we have control or able to live fully. So by learning what's in shadow and taking, embracing, as you said, embracing that energy, owning it fully, we then have control over it. We then can choose how we show up and what we want to do with our life versus just being at the mercy of old brain mapping that happened when we were kids.
Mm-hmm. So can you explain a little bit how shadow work works? So you're saying it's not like regular therapy where you're just talking about it. You're actually trying to remap people's reactions. How do you do that?
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely not talk therapy, though we definitely do, you know, some talking. You know, the overall kind of way it goes is somebody has something that's not working in their life. So we figure it out. Okay, well, what is it you want? We always start with what you want. So what is it you want? And we dive deep into that. You know, I want to get a new job. Well, why? And so we dig deep to really understand what it is that we're really moving toward and how it'll affect our life and, you know, why do we want it? How do we want to feel? So we start with what we want. Then we start looking at why don't you have it? You know, real basic stuff. You know, well, I have this sabotaging behavior, or I have this, you know, this flash anger or this self-judgment or whatever. I have this voice in my head that tells me I can't. Or I just have overwhelming fear. Every time I think I'm going to do something, I just panic or I procrastinate. So we start to figure out, well, what are some of the behaviors? What are some of the thoughts that keep us from having what we want? And then, well, Cliff, the founder, he what he did was he took a lot of different types of work and put it together. And one of the tools he uses is something from psychodrama and gestalt where they separate the thoughts outside of ourselves. We call it splitting out. So, you know, we have this want and we have this thing, this part of us that's getting in our way, this behavior, this thought. And so we look at it objectively. We step away from it. So, for example, you know, if it's just coaching, for example, you know, maybe we have a couple of chairs and one chair is going to represent the message that says, you can't do this. You don't have what it takes. And then the other chair will be the reaction, but I want this, but now I feel like I can't have it. I feel scared or small. And I mean, it's a symbolic container we're creating without real life consequences. We're in this environment where we can look at things in a safe way with, you know, and we'll use colors, we use cloths to represent the different energies. But anyway, so we split it out. We look at these parts objectively, and we go, okay, there's this part that's saying you can't have it, you're not good enough, and then there's this part that's going, oh, maybe I don't have what it takes, maybe I can't do this, and that part might feel really scared and small. And then we look at those two parts and go, well, where did this come from? Where did, you know, when was the first time you ever saw this in your life or experienced this? And maybe you heard it, maybe you didn't, but does this seem familiar? You know, where's this from? And almost always people can spot something like, oh yeah, you know, when, you know, that's my dad. My dad used to say those things to me and I used to feel so scared. Or, oh yeah, you know, my teacher in first grade did this thing and said this to me and I was so embarrassed and I crumbled in front of the class or whatever. So we track it. We track it back. And then there are specially designed processes to change the experience. Maybe we need to set a boundary with the voice that's saying you can't have it, and we might rev up some warrior energy. We do a lot of archetypal exercises, archetypal talk, Jungian archetypal tools we use. And so maybe somebody will, you know, step in front of that chair and say, I am good enough. I can have whatever I want. I am powerful. I deserve it, you know. And maybe, you know, they feel the energy of saying something very different and feel that inside their body. Or maybe that little person that feels deflated and unable to move forward needs a blessing, needs some support. And then there's just, those are like basic processes, but there are these advanced processes that just go back in and just reshape the original experience to bring, like, the software up to speed. You know, it's like we had these experiences mm-hmm. when we were a little kid, and now we're adults. And so we have these, you know, specially designed processes, you know, depending on where people are led, what people are feeling like they need, because we're always following the lead of the person, and then they get to experience something new, and they get to shift it, and they get to go inside of the experience, and that's where the brain changes, that's where the neural pathways change, and there's a lot of work out there now, and a lot of research showing that's exactly what happens by going in and experiencing it and changing it, not just thinking it through, not just with affirmations, and I can do anything. I mean, that helps a little bit, mm-hmm. But to really go back in and change the messages, you change your access to these energies.
Right, right. I know you talk a lot about the inner critic, and I want to get into that a little bit more. But before we do that, let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the inner critic, okay?
Great.
Everyone listening,
sure.
Don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Jeannie Moon Schreiber, and we will be right back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Jeannie Moon Schreiber. And we were just talking about the work she does called Shadow Work. And I was asking her about the inner critic, what that is and why we have one. So can you tell us about the inner critic that you refer to?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of us are in tune with that inner dialogue that we have, and sometimes we don't actually hear it, we just feel it. We feel the pain, we feel the fear, we feel the anxiety or the sadness. But we all have that inner dialogue, that voice inside of us that cannot be so nice sometimes. We want to go for, you know, a new job, or we want to put ourselves online, or we want to, whatever it is we want, and that voice in our head can beat us up. And how many times do we say to ourselves, oh, gosh, I really blew it, or, you know, if only I did X, Y, and Z, or, God, I'm such a shit, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is. You know, that's the inner critic, you know, telling us that we, you know, we suck in some way, or we can't do something for some reason. And it's, you know, just talking about the inner critic, we can go for hours, and I'm going to give people access to my ebook later, which is a gift to your listeners about the inner critic. But for now, just to say that how we view it is there's no part inside of us that's bad. Every part that's inside of us has some value and some service, and how we see the inner critic, that it's that part of us that came online, it was kind of burst inside of us at some point as a protecting piece. And that sounds a little, you know, backwards, because it's like, well, it, you know, this inner critic hurts me. It keeps me from trying new things. It has me doubt myself. Sometimes it makes me feel sick. How on earth is it protecting me? And so, you know, you have to look at, well, where are these, you know, why am I telling myself this? And what is it keeping me from? You know, if I'm about to put myself out there, you know, broke up with a man or had a, you know, lost my marriage or whatever it was, and then I decide I want to start dating again, and I start to tell myself that I'm too fat or I'm too old or whatever, that's that inner critic, you know, kicking in. So why might I be telling myself all those things? Well, most likely I've been hurt in some way, and I don't want to be hurt again. And so that's part.
So it's a protection.
And, you know, shadow work, we talk. Sorry?
So it's like a protection.
That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a part, and we talk about parts in shadow work. We're always pulling out parts. There's the part that knows how great we are. There's the part that wants to stand up for us. There's the part that, you know, needs to be taken care of. You know, there are all these parts. And so the inner critic we see as a part that's always assessing risk. It's kind of like our radar for pain, radar for things that might go wrong that can hurt us. And so, yeah, it's kind of like this inner part that's looking around and watching and going, oh, if I let her put that resume in the mail to that place and she gets that job, that may not be good for her, because if she gets rejected, she's going to feel so horrible. So you know what? I'm just going to keep distracting her and tell her she doesn't have what it takes, and just going to have her do all these other things so that she doesn't take that risk. And then we hate ourselves for not doing the things that we want to do, and we hate that part that beats us up. But once we start to really understand how the inner critic works and why it's there, we can tame it. We can work with it. We can actually get it to work differently with us. Its job is to keep us from pain. And once that inner critic knows that we're having pain because of its strategy, that's when life changes. And that's what, you know, the ebook actually helps people learn is how to tame it, how to get those voices to quiet down. You know, I'm not inner critic free, nor do I want to be, frankly, because it keeps me on track. It mm-hmm. helps me make good decisions. It has me question whether I'm ready or not sometimes, but it doesn't take me out of the game. It doesn't pull the carpet out from underneath me like it used to. I used to be terrified of speaking in front of people, terrified. That inner critic had me, oh, horrible, horrible. And now, you know, it's like, you sure you want to do this? Are you ready? You know, it's like a, mm-hmm. like almost like a little chihuahua nipping at my ankles versus that big lion that used to roar in my head. So, yeah, it's got a purpose. The thing is, how is it working for us? Is it too big, too loud? Is it keeping us from moving forward? What needs to change? What's not working? I mean, that's what shadow
right.
work is.
As you talk as a parent, you know, my head's going, da, 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 you know, I'm thinking of all these things. Like, as a parent, you know, you want to, at least everybody I know who's a parent, you know, you want to encourage your kids and you want to build up their self-esteem and let them
yep.
know that they are that anything they want to do is possible and give them all these, this self-confidence. Can we be sabotaging them by building them up too much if they're, you know, if they're not really great at something, but you still encourage them that they're great and they can do anything? I mean, does it ever work in the reverse? What's that?
That is one big topic, parenting. Yeah, man.
You know, you always want to tell your child, you know, the life is your oyster.
Stars.
You can do anything you want.
Yeah. Shoot for the stars.
Right.
You know, yeah, I think it's a yes and. It's like, yes, this is my personal opinion now.
Well.
Yes, let's like, you know, be the wind beneath their wings. Yes, let's let them know that they can shoot for the stars and live big lives and manifest their dreams. And teach them that life has limitations and that sometimes things don't work out and that's okay. And what, you know, like what does it mean when you go for something that doesn't work out? Is it failure or is it just information? I mean, it's, parenting is the biggest friggin' job on the planet and there's no perfect way to do it. I do believe though that we've overshot. I mean, when we look at, I guess they're called the millennials, when we look at this generation, they're like, you know, their shit don't stink, you know, that they're, you know, like they're doing whatever they want. They're just like out there and there's a certain type of personality that has happened because, I mean, I don't know, big topic. I think being a human being and all the different pieces is complicated. I think being honest and truthful with our kids, loving and present is really the answer to it all. And then the rest is just going to take form. You know, I remember, here's something. It was really interesting. I remember my son, I was like 4 or 5, and he was taking a bath. And I remember the babysitter was coming, and he was like, don't let her in. I don't want her to see me naked. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where did that come from? Because my husband and I were nudists at heart. We were just like, the body's beautiful and no shame and all that. And suddenly, don't let her see me. It's like, this human experience is so complicated. It's like what comes into this world? What, you know, what's our DNA? To me, it's mind-blowing. So to answer your question, my opinion is be real with your kids, be authentic, be loving, be present. Let them know the truth that you see it, and let them know that this is the truth that you see, and they might have their own opinions along the way. It's such a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing, this life thing. Yeah. But I think we could overshoot.
It's amazing how many adults I know, you know, 50, 60-year-old people who still, you know, blame their parent for something that, you know, that they're struggling with in their life, you know. And, you know, I think, you know, at a certain point, you know, we have to move on from where that shadow might have come from and just fix it on our own. But you can't, you know, it doesn't help to, you know, put the blame or...
stay in the blame game. Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things I love, love, love about shadow work is finding the gold. You know, I had some major processes around my mom. I had so much anger toward her and such a horrible relationship, at least in my eyes. You know, I didn't like to be around her. I didn't want to, I moved clear across the country to get away from her. If I had to come back, it was like counting the days until I get out of here, you know. And she's one of my best friends now, and I totally thank shadow work for it because, some stuff happened, and she brought her shadows to the table, and she had her quirks, and I didn't like them and had my issues with them. But at the end of the day, there was gold in there. There was, you know, sometimes, you know, my mom likes it. I always tell her, I'm always throwing her under the bus, but she's like, no, it's okay, you know, you're just saying it as it is. You know, my mom likes to have things a certain way. She likes to have control in, you know, things in a certain place. There's rules or whatever. And what I got was a lot of internal self-criticism and judgment because I was always afraid of not following the rules and falling short. That was what was running inside of me. My mom, you don't mess up, you know?
Right.
You got to do everything right and perfect. And so I went through my life kind of walking on eggshells because I didn't want to screw up. I needed everything to be right. I needed to, you know, turn over every stone and make sure I covered every base. That was my mom's wiring that I took on. And I could have stayed there and blamed her. But what happened was I realized inside of the energy of looking under every stone and trying to watch everything is me trying to do a good job, me trying to stay on the ball. And that is a wonderful gift that I got from her. I just needed to find a way to access the energy in a healthy way. I took on her shadow. Then I learned how to embrace the full energy of that shadow, the over-protective, over-controlling energy out of fear that something's going to go wrong, embrace the fear, dance with the fear, and go, okay, let's look at everything and let's make a good decision and not go crazy over it. When I wouldn't have my business if it wasn't for that shadow she gave me that I embraced the gold of. She, you know, that energy keeps me on my toes and helps me stay organized and focused and really do great things in the world. So there are gifts from our parents. Once we can get past the blame and say, okay, this is how it's manifest, my mom's shadow or my dad's shadow, that I've taken on that message, where's the gold? What can I harvest out of that so that I can take charge of that energy now and let go of my mom and dad's stuff? It's theirs. It's not mine. I don't want it anymore. How can I live more fully and take the gold out of it? Because they just wanted the best for us. I believe, you know, they did the best they could with their own shadows, you know?
Right. And that's what you have to realize, that they all, you know, everybody comes in with their shadows, as you call it. I mean, I know different people have different languages for all these things, but the stuff that you know, some of it you get from this life, but I believe that you come into this life with some stuff too. I mean, I've had 3 kids and, you know, each one was so different. They came in with some of their own stuff that was not learnt or taught in this world.
I believe that too. Yep.
It was learnt or taught in a past life. And,
yeah.
You know, and
totally believe that.
Yeah. It just takes to have 3, you know, different kids to realize that. I mean, it's just so different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've done, you know, shadow work with people from, you know, that weren't able to place whatever their challenge was in this lifetime, and we worked it. You know, I didn't have to be a past life regression person. It was like, okay, here are these issues, here are the challenges, here are the old messages. You know, I've had people say, if I do this, I feel like I'm going to get killed, you know, and they say it feels like a past life where maybe I was stoned to death or whatever, and they may not know exactly what happened, but they have this terror that if they actually write the book or go for the new job or whatever it is, that they're going to die. That's how intense it is. So it's like, okay, well, how risky is it in present time that actually is going to happen? We need to see. Let's make sure that you're not going to take a chance and actually, you know, get stoned to death in this lifetime. What's really risky here? And if it's inside of you and you're feeling like that and you can't place it in this life, it doesn't matter. Let's just put those parts out. Let's look at those parts and figure out how to change the inner mapping so that you don't have that fear, you don't have that sabotage, so that you can harvest the energy and stay on top of it and have control over it. I totally agree with you.
I also think it's okay to acknowledge that some things just might not feel great to you and to avoid them. As I'm saying this, I'm thinking, you know, my husband and I took on getting beehives and doing beekeeping together. And as, you know, we got the suits and we started doing it, and as I was doing it, I realized I was really uncomfortable. Even though I had the bee suit and it was supposed to be protecting me, I was not that comfortable with hundreds and hundreds of bees flying around my head and buzzing in my ear while I was out there working. And I couldn't relax. And I just, you know, I came to the realization that, you know what? He really likes this. He's much more comfortable with it. And there's a lot of other people that are, and I'm not. And so I'll be in the kitchen and I'll help you harvest and extract the honey, and I'll make the lip balm, and I'll cook with the honey, and I'll do everything else. But, you know, the beekeeping part's not for me. And
that's great.
Right, and I just decided I'm okay with that, you know?
Exactly. It's if you weren't okay with that you might need to look at that. Why am I judging myself for not liking this? Why do I feel shame about not wanting to be a beekeeper? You know, but I mean, you know, there are some things, like I wanted to get over my fear of water. So I did, and I always wanted to scuba dive. And, you know, I pushed myself. And I ended up, you know, going scuba diving. And I did it. And I was 50 feet down, and, you know, I was enjoying to some extent. But there was also this part of me, it's like, you know what, did it, not doing this again. You know?
Right.
It's like healthy fear, healthy relationship with ourselves. You know, we don't have to do everything. We don't have to like everything. Can we allow ourselves to say, you know what, this isn't my thing, and if it's your thing, great, but, you know, I'm okay,
and be okay with
not jumping out of a plane.
Right, be okay with it. Right, everybody in my family has jumped out of a plane. I have no desire. I'd rather spend the money and go get a massage. You know, I don't need to do it.
Me too. Bring on the massage.
Right. Right. You know, I don't want to say, you know, all this fear. I just, you know, I just doesn't seem worth it to me. I don't need the rush or whatever someone gets from jumping out of a plane. But anyway.
We have to look at why we want what we want and why we're saying no to it and have that healthy relationship with our fear. You know, it's like, in my gut or in my body, I'm not so thrilled about being a beekeeper. There's something about it. It's not something I want to do. Okay,
right.
You know?
Right.
It's just something you really, really wanted to do. And
right, and I think it's really important. I'm glad other people like doing it.
Yeah.
Because we need our bees.
Yeah. So it's a healthy relationship with our fear, listening to our fear, listening to, you know, our bodies and allowing ourselves the compassion around whatever it is. Shadow work allows us to have deep compassion for our journey so that we can really love ourselves, so we can kind of get out of all the crazy thinking stuff and get back into the being, get back into connecting to the truth of who we are so that we can really be in alignment with the way we want to be with ourselves and the world. I mean, that's what shadow work is cleaning up the book we've picked up along the way so that we can just relax and enjoy our life.
Right. Well, before we run out of time, can you share with everybody how they can learn more about what you do, get in touch with you, and also I know you wanted to offer your ebook for free to everybody listening, so tell them about that.
So one great resource is shadowwork.com. That's an easy one for people to remember. So shadowwork.com. And I'm listed there too, obviously, because I'm one of the facilitators, so I'm there. But shadowwork.com has lots of articles and lots of great stuff. My website is innercritictamer.com. People call
inner
me the inner
what?
Critic tamer. Tamer, like a lion tamer.
Uh-huh.
I tame the inner critic. So inner critic tamer, T-A-M-E-R, innercritictamer.com. And there's a lot of content there as well. On the media page, there's a lot of the a lot of interviews and videos and things like that. And for people that are curious about getting more in touch with their inner critic and taming their inner critic, the ebook gift is can be grabbed at tinyurl.com/tameitnow. tinyurl.com/tameitnow. And there's content. There's some good content, and it's a workbook. It helps you literally move through 10 powerful steps to really connect with your inner critic, to understand your inner critic, and learn how to reel it in. It's a really great journey. It's a really cool ebook. I'm very proud of it, and it's for free if people want to get it. So.
Well, that's great. Jeannie, thank you so much. And I will share that. I'll share that link on my website. So when people go on to listen to to this podcast in the archives, I'll have the link there. Okay?
Yeah, cool. Sure.
All right. Jeannie, thank you. And everybody listening out there, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.